Oxbalm, Dizzy Seal, and Horseweed took the trail that led off the eastern side of the hill and wound down around the base through a blaze of pink snowberry flowers. The shrubs sent trailing tendrils across the path. Oxbalm took his time, avoiding them so he wouldn't trip. He doubted that his bad knees could take such a jolt. They would probably snap in two just to spite him. As they curved around the base of the hill, the sweat lodge came back into view. Catch Straw had built it large enough to hold 10 men, though he'd invited no one to participate in the purification ceremonies with him. A shimmering haze of steam haloed the structure. Oxbalm fortified himself as he stepped around the woodpile and stopped before the door flap. Dizzy Seal and Horseweed flanked him. Horseweed held his atlatl in a death grip, the dart knocked and ready. Dizzy Seal's elderly eyes roved about frantically. In the orange firelight, he looked like a dying man.
Catchstraw, I'm sorry to bother you, but I would like to speak to you. It's urgent. The 2 men who are looking for the woman named Kestrel have arrived. Did you hear me?
Oxbalm hobbled closer and put his ear close to the door flap. There was nothing to be heard, no movements, no breathing.
Catchstraw, are you in there? It's Oxbalm.
Gingerly, Oxbalm pulled the door flap aside and peered into utter darkness. He couldn't see a thing.
Horseweed, please throw more wood on the fire out there.
Horseweed did so, and as the flames leaped higher, the interior of the lodge glowed faintly. Steam shimmered like sunlit fog. Oxbalm hooked the flap on its peg and stepped inside. A 12 colored baskets sat in a neat line along the back wall, and Catstraw's bedding of hides lay piled on the south side of the central fire pit. A mound of hot rocks currently filled the pit, but a fire had been lit in it earlier. White ashes ringed the rocks. On a log that ran the length of the north wall, abalone shell bowls stood heaped high with acorns, walnuts, and strips of jerked venison. Oxbalm shook his head. Catchstraw was such an old fool. Didn't he realize that in the damp environment of a sweat lodge, nuts and meats were sure to mold? And leaving them close to the ground was an open invitation to every rodent within 2 days' walk. His bedding, too, would mildew and harden. Oxbalm frowned. But of course Catchstraw knew these things. Why would he make such obvious errors?
Unless he's not thinking right. Not thinking like a human because he's filled with spirit plants.
Oxbalm fingered his chin as he studied the baskets, damp hides, and hot rocks. Sumac had told Oxbalm days ago that Catchstraw spent half of every morning out prowling the meadows, collecting plants he would let no one see.
No wonder Catchstraw built this so big. He's moved all of his belongings down. This isn't just a sweat lodge. He's going to live here.
Dizzy Seal bravely ducked in behind Oxbalm.
Yeah, careful. See the maze on the floor?
Oxbalm looked down. The red, black, and white lines wove an intricate labyrinth to the rear of the fire pit. Carefully, he hobbled forward and hunched down. As he extended his hand to touch the painting, he saw the sparse scatter of wolf hair that sprinkled the maze. His hand began to shake so badly that Dizzy Seal ran around the opposite side of the pit.
What's wrong?
Do you see them?
Oxbalm indicated several of the closest hairs. Dizzy Seal stumbled backward.
It was him!
Oxbalm rose and wiped his clammy hands on his pants.
Maybe.
Horseweed ducked through the entry, his eyes wide.
What did you find?
Come and look at this, grandson. Quickly. Then we must get out of here.
Horseweed knelt before the scatter of wolf hair, picked one up, then threw it down as though it had burned him. He lurched unsteadily to his feet.
I think we should go hunt him down and dart him to death right now.
Yes, I agree.
This is no proof. There are those who will defend him. They'll say that Catchstraw just went out into the forest to gather plants again, and that when we saw the dire wolf and found Catchstraw gone from his lodge, we jumped to conclusions. Old woman Yuckathorn will accuse us of trying to malign his character. The village will split. Half of our relatives will go away and never want to see us again. No, not yet. We must wait a little longer.
Lamkill rose from his seat by Harrier's fire. The youth had made camp along the western trail that led to the sea. Lamkill's haphazard grass lodge was a good distance from the fire, well away from the smoke, in the soft meadow grass. At least he would sleep well there. To his left, on top of the hill, he could make out the dark forms of people moving through Otter Clan village, and the faint gleam of a above old man silvering the sky. Lamkill stretched his stiff muscles.
Oh, that was a long walk. I don't think my body will ever be the same again.
Harrier smiled grimly. He sat across the fire.
It has been a hard half moon. I'm anxious to get home.
So am I.
Tannin sat on a dead log with his head down, a cup of tea clutched between both hands. He'd grown too sullen to bear. Just looking at Tannin's grimace made Lamkill want to strike him.
Idiot brother. Don't you think I want this over too? Do you think I enjoy being shunned and slighted by every village we come to?
Lamkill lifted his pack from the log and slung it over his shoulder.
I'll be back shortly. I just need some time to pray to above old man.
I understand.
Harrier eyed the pack as though he suspected Lamkill's true reason for going into the forest. Tannin glanced at the pack, and his mouth pursed disdainfully.
Hurry back, Lamkill. I want to talk to you about Kestrel.
As you wish. I'll return soon.
He tramped out into the forest, ducking low beneath several thick oak branches. Deadfall and brush clogged these foothills, making walking difficult. A mass of deer trails crisscrossed here, going off in all directions. Lamkill picked one that led due north. He followed the winding path until it led him into a dense thicket of berry vines. Tiny white flowers covered the briar. Sweetness filled the cool night air. Lamkill examined the surroundings, the trunks of trees, the fallen logs. When he found a small patch of wildflowers, he stopped and sat down. Above old man had risen, and moonlight fell through the canopy of branches here, lighting the ground.
We must talk, my son.
He gently laid his pack in the midst of the fragrant wildflowers before him. He unlaced it and lifted the flap on the pack and peeled it back. Little Coyote lay still within, resting on a bed of sage leaves.
Come, son. Stand in the moonlight. Feel the wind on your face. It feels good.
He reverently removed his son and propped him up against the pack. Little Coyote stared at him through his stony green eyes.
You are so tiny, son. So beautiful. Are you awake? Can you hear me?
I hear you, father.
I was afraid for a moment. But of course you're still here. I need you, my son. These Otter Clan people are plotting against me. I can feel it. They want to protect your mother.
They won't be able to, father. You're more clever than they are.
Yes, but it will be hard for me to take her away from them, son. I must catch your mother before she reaches them. Where is she now? Can you see her?
Yes, father. She's coming up this very trail. She'll be here in less than a hand of time.
I'll try, son. I'll try to catch her, but...
Don't worry, father. She's not traveling with Sun Chaser now. She's alone and frightened. Well, not quite alone. She has my sister with her. But they'll be easy prey for you.
Like a lust in his body, rage filled Lamkill.
Thank you, my son. I knew you wouldn't let me down. Thank you. I'll catch her, and when I do, you and I will spend hands of time watching her die.
Tannin is going to try to talk you out of killing her, father. Do you know that?
Yes. Yes, I know. His time is coming, my son. He'll pay for his disbelief, for his weakness. Just wait, little Coyote. I will avenge every wrong that has ever been done to you. And me.
Lamkill frowned. Little Coyote had stopped talking, and the glitter had vanished from his eyes. The green stones had gone dull, opaque.
Son? Son, what's wrong? Are you all right?
I'm tired, Father. Very tired.
Yes. Yes, I'm certain you are. We have had a long, hard journey to get here, haven't we? Why don't you sleep, little coyote? Sleep until I catch your mother.
Carefully, Lambkill lifted his son.
Yes. Sleep well, son. It will be a long walk home after we're finished here, too.
Sunchaser hiked the trail with his atlatl in one hand, a selection of darts in the other. Pines jutted up above the rest of the forest, their pointed tops darkly silhouetted against the slate-blue opalescence of the evening sky, their branches swaying gently in the cool wind. A hand of time ago, Helper had started growling, the sound low from deep in his throat. The dog's eyes searched the forest vigilantly. He trotted at Sunchaser's side with the lanky stride of a prowling wolf.
I know, Helper. I feel it too.
Some dark power pressed down on them, smothering. So close and suffocating that it should have been visible, like dirty mist in the air. The skin prickled on Sunchaser's neck, and tickles ran across his skin like invisible ants. Danger. There. Ahead of them in the trees. But he didn't know how far ahead. Sunchaser slowed and cocked his head. From long practice, he cleared himself of worries and fear, blanking himself to the sensations of power, seeking the source of... what? Violent anger. Feral rage. It burned like a fire in Sunchaser's soul. Festering hate. So much hatred for everything alive. The searing sensation increased with the darkness, as though the beast fed upon and gained its power from the deepening shadows. Once, when Sunchaser had accidentally cornered a short-faced bear in a box canyon, he'd felt this same intensity of blind fury. He lifted his nose to scent the wind. Short-faced bears had a rank odor from the carrion they routinely fed upon. Test the wind as he might, he smelled only the damp exhalations of grass and pine. The urge built.
Flee. Run from the creature's path.
But Kestrel would be walking this same trail not so far ahead, perhaps on a collision course with that enraged animal. Sunchaser had pushed himself mercilessly, trying to catch up with her before darkness fell.
Hurry. You must hurry. You have to find her before Lambkill does.
Oxbalm wouldn't simply turn Kestrel over to Lambkill. Of that, Sunchaser felt certain. Sumac would demand a council session to consider the charges, assuming that Kestrel made it to the village before her husband captured her. And if she didn't, how would Sunchaser find her? Where would Lambkill take her? Back to Juniper Village? Or would he kill her here in the depths of the forest where no one would know?
Come on, Helper. Let's run again. We can do it.
Sunchaser shook back the sweaty strands of white hair that had glued themselves to his forehead and sprinted up the hill, pushing his muscles until they trembled in protest. A black shape gliding through the darkness ranged out in front of him. Helper had stopped growling, had gone quiet the way a wild dog does when he has prey in sight. Sunchaser's nerves crackled like fur rubbed by an angry hand. Only tame dogs yelped and panted their eagerness, foolishly warning the prey. Helper vanished silently over the next grassy swell. Beyond the shadowy outlines of the foothills, a lustrous arc of silver lit the sky. Above, Old Man would be up soon, and his mighty presence would chase away half of the Star People. Sunchaser prayed that the trail cut across meadows and not through the tree-choked forest. In the open, moonlight would illuminate any enemy who dared to attack and give him a target for his dart. Most of the animals that roamed the night would cling to the dense brush and trees, waiting for unsuspecting prey. If the trail veered into the forest, could he afford to stay in the meadows? He might lose his way. And precious time. All day long, he'd been frantic for Kestrel. He knew why she had gone. She'd tried before to tell him that she thought herself responsible for his inability to find his way through the maze. His failures at healing yesterday must have tormented her.
And I made it worse, forcing my needs upon her. It's not your fault, Kestrel. Those things are my fault.
The undulations in the trail made his moccasins slip and slide, but he kept up a steady trot, his gaze ever sweeping the shadows. He dipped down the side of one hill and ran up another. When he reached the crest and looked into the narrow valley below, he saw a strewn handful of dove-colored ponds. The weak inverted images of the trees stood perfectly preserved on those still, reflective surfaces. Sunchaser didn't see Helper. But he heard the soft rustle of fur catching on brush. He turned to look over his shoulder.
It's just darkness.
But he shivered, feeling something out there, as if danger coalesced from the threads of shadows.
Helper? Is that you, boy?
Something stirred in the inky shadows at the edge of the trees east of the trail. Did failing light play tricks? Or did eyes gleam there?
Helper?
Without warning, the huge animal burst from the darkness.
Dire wolf!
Sunchaser fell backward a step and pulled a dart from the quiver on his back. He knocked it in his atlatl and braced himself to cast. When the animal was close enough, he would dart it in the heart and run.
Dire wolves are so hard to kill.
The wind shifted and brought Sunchaser a strange, cloying odor, oddly human. The dire wolf crested the hill. Those brown eyes bored into Sunchaser, and he perceived something familiar in that hate-filled gaze. Sunchaser launched his dart with all of his strength. The dire wolf leaped aside like a spirit dancer, whirling, then staggering. The dart had lodged in the front shoulder, where it flopped with each tortured leap the animal made. Sunchaser, his senses blurred by panic, ran for the trees. The wolf sounded terrifyingly close behind him. Sunchaser pounded into the forest and ran for the closest pine, slipped his atlatl through his belt, and then jumped to grab the lowest limb. He swung himself up so he could hook his knees over another branch, but before he could climb higher, the glint of fangs flashed in the corner of his vision. Claws ripped through the flesh and muscles in his chest and right arm. The force of the impact jerked him from the tree. When he hit the pine duff, he rolled up onto his knees. The wolf stood no more than 10 paces away, glaring hate.
Why doesn't it charge?
A glimmer of something akin to fear lit the animal's dark eyes. Sunchaser slowly slid his hand toward the darts on his back. Running would be futile. Before he could even get to his feet, the beast would leap and knock him flat again. Blood spread warmly across his torn shirt and ran in rivulets down his arm. The wolf's fangs had merely glanced across his chest, but had cut deep through his arm, slicing an artery. He couldn't possibly cast another dart, at least not with his right hand, and he couldn't do it accurately with his left. He would have to wield his dart like a spear, and with his left hand. Trembling, Sunchaser lifted the dart before him, pausing only long enough to breathe spirit into the stone point. The wolf stalked forward. Saliva dripped from its muzzle, coating its chest with a silver froth. It had broken the dart shaft during the chase, but a short length of the smoothed willow still protruded from its front shoulder. Sticky blood clotted around it. As the wolf came closer, it probed the forest floor with its nose, licking hungrily at the spots of Sunchaser's blood on the duff, the way a dreamer would drink from the nectar of sacred plants to gain their power. Sunchaser set the long dart in the Otlatl's hook and crouched, mouth dry, ready to thrust. The animal sensed his fear, sensed that final desperation. The huge wolf twisted sideways, sidestepping the dart point at the last instant. Sunchaser made it halfway to his feet. The wolf knocked him backward, sending him sliding through the pine duff. The wolf's jaws closed around his left leg, and Sunchaser twisted away, lashing out with his blade, cutting a gash in the wolf's black hide. A frenzy of madness possessed Wolf. With jaws locked on Sunchaser's arm, the animal shook him the way coyote shakes rabbit to kill it, and the dart point was flung into the darkness. Wolf lunged for Sunchaser's throat, and Sunchaser kicked out. He twisted wildly while Wolf's canines ripped at his blocking arms. He squirmed backward, trying to reach the dart point. Wolf hesitated, looked up, suddenly distracted, and Sunchaser dove for his dart point. He plunged the blade deep into Wolf's right hindquarter. Wolf was about to attack again. A hurtling black body slammed into the animal. Sunchaser rolled free, scrambling to recover.
Helper!
Sunchaser staggered forward, seeking to drive his dart point into the dire wolf, but finding no opportunity in the milling legs, snapping teeth, and thrashing tails. In an instant, the dire wolf tore free and raced away into the trees, Helper slashing at his rear.
Helper! No!
Sunchaser dropped to his knees, spent.
Don't chase him! Let him go!
But dire wolf might return to finish the kill. Sunchaser's entire body throbbed as he slid backward, leaving a broad trail of blood. He managed to drag himself into a dense pile of deadfall deep into the smell of moldering wood and new grass. He collapsed on his left side. Here, at least, his back and sides were protected from attack. Sunchaser weakly lifted his head.
Help her! Help her!
A black blot in the darkness. Helper crawled in, sniffing at the blood, licking Sunchaser's hand, then his face, the tongue warm and reassuring.
You all right?
Sunchaser was so weary he couldn't reach down to pat his friend.
Good boy, Helper. Good boy. Are you all right? Did Wolf hurt you?
Helper pawed at him, as if trying to get him to move.
Yes, you are.
Sunchaser shifted his mangled leg.
You're in much better condition than I am.
With every beat of his heart, blood drenched his ripped shirt and pants, and a numb sensation filtered through him. He felt strangely detached from his body, as though his spirit floated high above him. Was he losing so much blood?
Helper, Helper, go find Oxbaum. He's up the trail. Go find Oxbaum.
Helper madly scrambled out of the deadfall. Sunchaser could feel himself slipping away, grayness fading. Pain flayed him as his shocked nerves awoke in a flood of agony. So lightheaded, drifting. Something nagged at the back of his mind, something about the wolf. What? The wolf. Those burning brown eyes, that fetid human scent. Its mad frenzy. Why had it... Sunchaser rolled to his back and peered unseeing at the dimness. Dire wolves have yellow eyes.
Oh, spirits, no.
His thoughts wavered, moving like whirlwinds of dust created by the feet of racing children. His body spun, pulsing, as though on the fourth night of the mammoth spirit dance. He could scarcely feel his flesh, was aware only of the cadence of the sacred motions, the movements of the dance, becoming life, lifting him off the ground, taking him flying into the stars. Then a hand, bright and golden, appeared before Sunchaser's eyes, like a figment spawned by death or by extreme thirst. He blinked at it, disbelieving.
Come with me, Sunchaser. Take my hand. I need to show you the twists and turns of the star web.
The star web? What is that?
Your heart, Dreamer. Yours and everything else's. Come, take my hand, before it's too late.
But where are we going? Who are you?
You're hurt, Sunchaser. You don't recall, but we've met before, cycles ago in a different world. I'm Wolf Dreamer. I led the first people up from the dark underworlds to this world of light. But the light is going to die, Sunchaser. Mammoths and lions will go first, then bristle snails and salt marsh harvest mice, a few tiny pupfish, and finally eagles and bears. Everything else will follow, too soon, unless you help me.
Sunchaser's heart thundered. Deep in his soul, he knew what the final moments of light would be like. He could hear and see those eternal instants as though they'd been burned into his soul with a fiery brand. A deluge of misty rainbow fires, swallowed by stunning darkness. Infinite. With all of his dwindling strength, Sunchaser reached into that blinding golden radiance and felt warm fingers clasp his.
I'm ready, Wolf Dreamer. Take me.
Lambkill stretched out on his side in the soft grass before Harrier's fire. Around them, oaks lifted gnarled branches toward the sky like supplicating hands. Beyond them, the fires of the Otter Clan blinked and winked where they dotted the top of the ridge. Why had the Otter Clan come here? Half of the trees had lightning scars on them. The violent fall winds had also left their marks on the trees, and more winds would ravage the village when the seasons changed. Oxbaum must be a fool. No matter. Oxbaum's leadership wasn't a concern of Lambkill's. By the time the Otter Clan realized how badly they had chosen, Lambkill would be long gone, and Kestrel but a memory. For the first time in moons, he felt calm and free of care. Tannin, however, sat cross-legged beside him, with a worried expression on his face and his shoulders hunched beneath his buckskin shirt. He stared into the green liquid in his wooden cup as though it's something repulsive. Across the fire from them, Harrier and his younger brother, Ravenlight, sat on rocks they had dragged in from the forest. They'd shoved the end of a pine log into the fire, and it burned bright and fragrant. The orange glow shadowed their faces, making their massive brows and flat noses stand out while it created hollows of their eyes. Lambkill swirled his tea.
Where are your other brothers, Harrier? Did they run home when they discovered how arduous this trip would be?
No. We split up to watch both of the trails that lead into the Otter Clan village. We assumed she would come up from the west, but of course none of us could know for certain. Trickster and Flint have a camp on the eastern trail.
She's coming up from the coast. Cocky and confident, too.
Why would you say that?
Because she'll think she's almost safe. Why shouldn't she be confident?
Harrier lifted his tea and took a long swallow, then wiped his mouth on the back of his sleeve.
Let me tell you some things about this clan. Oxbaum's wife, Sumac, has always taken sides with Kestrel whenever we've discussed her. Be prepared for that.
Women stick together. That's to be expected. It won't change things.
How can you be so sure? What if Sumac makes a fuss when we try to take Kestrel out of the village? Oxbaum said that Sumac would demand a council session to hear the charges against your wife.
So we sit through an Otter Clan council, then we go. We've hunted this long. Another day won't make much difference.
And what if they find her innocent of the incest and murder charges?
Ha! How could they? We are all witnesses to her guilt.
It will still be our word against hers. The Otter Clan traces its descent through the women. They might not believe six men. They could vote to set her free. Or worse. Since she claims to be related to them, they could admit her into the clan. In that case, we would have to fight them to get her back.
It will never go that far. Believe me.
Ravenlight leaned sideways to whisper something to Harrier, and the warrior's face darkened. He nodded.
Yes, Ravenlight is right. Perhaps we should talk to Catstraw before we take the chance of a council session.
Lambkill heard Little Coyote whisper from his pack.
Yes, Father. Catstraw is the one I told you about. Go to him. He's seen Mother. Talk to him about Mother before Sumac has her chance to stop you.
Lambkill realized that his face went blank when he listened to Little Coyote, but the looks that Harrier and Ravenlight were giving him made him smile grimly. They peered at him as though he'd just called a ghost from the air. Could they hear his son's voice, he wondered? No. If they had, they would have shown astonishment, not suspicion. Lambkill stared at the fire, assuming a relaxed posture.
Yes, we must talk to this Catstraw. The four of us should go to see him at dawn tomorrow.
Harrier laced his fingers before him and nodded.
I think that's wise. Ravenlight won't be there, though. Tonight it's his turn to run the western trail searching for your wife. If he's back by dawn, he'll want to sleep. But I'll go with you.
On her stomach, Kestrel moved with the stealth of bobcat through the moldering deadfall, her ears straining to pierce the sounds of wind through the oak leaves. Powerful scents of spring flowers and deer dung stung her nostrils.
You just imagined it.
She'd been telling herself that for half a hand of time, but the voice had imprinted itself on her soul like a poisonous taste on her tongue.
It's because you're so close. That's why you think you hear his voice. It's not real, Kestrel. It can't be real. Please, Mother Ocean, don't let it be real.
Cloud Girl slept in her sack, and Kestrel prayed that she would stay asleep. Darkness, the rustle of the wind, and the sound of male voices from the camp beyond the trees should cover any sounds that she herself made. The voices were unfamiliar, but for a moment, for just a brief moment, Kestrel could have sworn she heard Lambkill's laugh. Warily, she dragged herself up to a tangle of brush and parted the branches. On top of the hill stood two large hide lodges. People moved through the flickering auras of plaza fires. She could see a woman speaking to a small group. Otter Clan village? As if being crushed beneath the weight of Mammoth's foot, her chest ached. She longed to rise and run all the way up the trail, but she pulled her gaze away. Closer, a dart's cast to the south. A small campfire lit the shadows. Three men sat around the blaze, one lounging on his side, his back to her. Gray hair hung down his back. Kestrel began to shake with such violence that she had to concentrate on letting the branches close slowly so they didn't flail against each other like dry sticks rattling in the wind.
Mother Ocean! Oh, Mother!
She clenched her hands into tight fists to still their tremor. If the village on top of the hill belonged to the Otter Clan, and they had allowed Lambkill to camp beside them, then they had already judged her guilty of the crimes her husband accused her of. Kestrel curled on her side. How soft the ground felt, and how soothing to lie here with her cheek pillowed against it. The fragrance of damp earth filtered up around her in a sweet, invisible haze. With the stealth of an assassin, the horrifying truth sank in. There was no haven. There never had been. The path that should have led her to the safety of Iceplant's family had led to nothing. Nothing at all. She had merely imagined the sanctuary, in the same way she had imagined suckling babies before she'd had any, or the way she could look out across the meadow down the hill and imagine it covered with deep snow that wouldn't be there for 7 more moons. She had built the haven from the wisps of her soul, and her soul was the only place where it had ever really existed. How could she so desperately want to weep for the loss of something that had never been? A queasy emptiness seeped through her. She'd known the truth for weeks, but she'd denied it, even when it had been thrown in her face.
Oh, Cloud Girl, I'm sorry.
Her mind raced, considering options, seeking a future already denied her. Coming to the Otter Clan had been a mistake. Lambkill had been bound to realize that someday she would seek it out.
Why didn't I go straight north once we'd crossed the Big Spoonwood River? If I'd walked in the shallows, he'd never have been able to track us, and by now, we'd be in the country of the Ice Ghosts.
But then, she would not have met Sunchaser. And even if Lambkill murdered her tonight, she would never regret that. But Cloud Girl, what of Cloud Girl? Her eyes were drawn to the hilltop again. One old woman had hobbled out to the edge of the crest and stood with her arms crossed, peering westward into the darkness. Firelight created an amber halo around her. She had a worried and almost frightened expression on her withered face. Was she the clan matron? Kestrel wondered. A great aunt or great grandmother of ice plants?
Blessed above, old man! Oh, I wish I could go and ask, but I can't. Even if the Otter Clan adopted Cloud Girl and me, Lambkill would find a way of killing us.
He would hide in the depths of the forest and wait for cycles, if necessary, to find them, together or alone. Memories flitted past of Iceplant, Owl Woman, and Juniper Village. Kestrel lay, unable to move. But suddenly a new emotion came to her, one that chased away her terror. Hatred. Pure. Fiery. Hatred for Lambkill, for what he had done to her and to Iceplant, for what he would do to Cloud Girl if he had the chance. A frightening clarity stole through Kestrel's veins. It felt like a spirit plant's presence. Whispers breathed from the bottom of her soul, directing, guiding. With utter calm, she raised her arms and slipped the baby's sack off of her back, then hung it on a snag of deadfall. Her daughter didn't stir. She slept with her head tilted sideways, resting on her soft rabbit fur hood. Her lips had parted, making her seem more innocent and vulnerable than ever. Kestrel's eyes blurred with tears. No matter what happened to her, someone from the Otter Clan would find Cloud Girl and adopt her. She ran gentle fingers down the front of Cloud Girl's sack. Stopping over her daughter's heart, she smiled.
I love you, baby.
Oh. Kestrel pulled herself forward on her elbows, maneuvering around rocks and clumps of brush until she had a clear line of sight. She peered around a pine trunk. That was Tannin, sitting cross-legged beside Lambkill. He looked as though he'd eaten something rotten. His mouth had puckered in distaste. Kestrel recalled Calling Crane's tenderness and love. Tannin's wife had never treated her with anything but kindness. She missed Calling Crane.
Please, Mother Ocean, I don't want to have to kill Tannen. Colin Crane would hate me for it.
Kestrel wished she could hear the words of the hushed conversation. Who was the youth in the red shirt? A warrior from the Otter Clan? Why would he be sitting with Lamkill and Tannen? Kestrel's jaw clenched. She knocked a dart in the shell hook of her atlatl and squirmed forward on her belly like snake. She could see Lamkill's face now. Old, so old. His jowls looked more pronounced than before, and the thick wrinkles beneath his chin hung in loose, overlapping folds. But his smile hadn't changed. Gloating, confident.
I'm going to kill you, my husband. Tonight.
Kestrel scrutinized his narrow back, imagining the placement of her dart. Sitting there like that in the light of the fire, he wouldn't even know what had hit him. The dart would slice through the muscles of his back and penetrate his lungs. He would drown in his own blood. And Tannen would catch her and kill her. But it didn't matter. Cloud Girl would be safe. Kestrel started to creep forward toward the cluster of mountain mahogany that created a blind no more than 30 hands from Lamkill's camp. But a sound behind her made her freeze. Something was running full tilt through the brush. She stared wide-eyed at the darkness. Then she saw the dog emerge from the shadows, its pink tongue dangling.
Help her!
As he came closer, she saw the wet stickiness that clotted his black coat and then smelled the coppery odor of blood. Kestrel shoved up on her elbows. She stroked his dark fur, and the dog leaned into her hand as though desperately needing the comfort she offered. Then, after licking Kestrel's hand quickly, he bounded away back down the trail. Kestrel's soul went cold. Helper trotted back and stuck his pointed nose in her face, then whirled lightly and ran down the trail again. When she didn't rise, he turned back. Cloud Girl awoke. Terror flooded Kestrel's veins.
What was that?
Kestrel saw Lamkill turn to look in Cloud Girl's direction. Kestrel scrambled to her feet and started to run back to her daughter, and then saw the old woman from the village running down the trail with all of her elderly strength. Kestrel's steps faltered.
Cloud Girl is better off here. If Lamkill has no idea she's my daughter, she'll be safe.
Several more women and two men ran after the old woman. Lamkill and the men at his camp rose and stared at the forest shadows where Cloud Girl's sack hung on the dead snag. Kestrel stood transfixed.
Ow!
Helper looked back and clamped his jaws around her hand, tugging at her cruelly, his canines digging into her flesh. She forced herself to back away. It was the hardest thing she'd ever done in her life. Kestrel thought she could see her daughter's tiny hands reaching out to her. She followed Helper into the black depths of the forest.
There's your baby in the forest.
By the time Sumac reached the bottom of the hill, Lamkill had disappeared into the trees. Sumac rushed headlong after him, her old heart pounding so hard that she could feel it in her throat.
Blessed Mother Ocean, if he hurts that baby.
When Sumac stopped running, she found Lamkill holding up a fur sack with a child in it. He held the sack at arm's length as though frightened of the baby. Sumac rushed forward and jerked it from his hands, then cradled the child to her breast.
Oh, little baby. Quiet, little baby.
The baby tipped a tear-streaked face up and frantically twined her fists in the fringes on Sumac's dress. A thick wealth of black hair covered the baby's tiny head. Softly, Sumac stroked her cheek. A haunted expression twisted Lamkill's face. He glanced from Sumac to the child and back.
Whose baby is that?
Mine now.
Sumac turned away and headed for the trail. She could see Oxbalm and several other villagers standing there next to Harrier. Tannen, Lamkill's younger brother, stood a short distance away beyond the glow of the fire, his face dark and inscrutable. Lamkill thrashed through the brush behind her. Sumac hobbled out across the grass and thrust the baby into Oxbalm's arms. He looked at his wife in puzzlement, but held the baby close. Then he peered over Sumac's shoulder at Lamkill. When the child fussed, Oxbalm rocked her gently, as he had rocked tens of babies over the long cycles.
I'll explain later. The baby is ours now.
Lambkill strode into the amber glow and clenched his fists at his sides.
Who does that baby belong to?
Oxbalm glanced at Sumac's face, and his faded eyes lit with understanding. He shifted the child into his right arm and reached out to take Sumac's hand. His warm touch comforted her.
This child belongs to the Otter Clan.
Are you telling me that someone from your village left her baby in the forest, alone, at night?
What I'm telling you is that this is none of your concern, Trader Lambkill.
Oxbalm hobbled up the trail toward the hilltop, dragging Sumac with him.
I think it's her baby. All night long, I've been feeling odd. I think she was here, saw her husband, and decided to leave her child and run away.
Then this Kestrel must have known that her lover's relatives are fools for children.
Perhaps.
Gladness swelled her chest. She timed her steps carefully, walking in stride with Oxbalm. It made both of them steadier. Maybe this little girl would fill the hole in their souls left by Mountain Lake's death. Sumac reached over and drew the rabbit fur hood up over the girl's head to protect her from the night's chill. The baby watched her through wide, unblinking eyes. Strange eyes, so deep and bright they seemed filled with the knowledge of eternity. Oxbalm crested the hill and headed across the grass for the central fire.
Who will you ask to feed this infant, my wife?
Against the clouds has a son about the age of this little girl. She has enough milk for two. She's always complaining about how much milk she has. She's been leaking all over her finest leathers. She'll be glad to have another child to feed.
Oxbalm stopped beside his cup near the fire and handed the child to Sumac.
You're too kind-hearted for your own good. Did you know that? If this is Kestrel's daughter, we'd better keep quiet about it.
She clutched the baby firmly. In the firelight, she could see Oxbalm's eyes soften. Sumac smiled at him and patted the baby's back.
Afraid you'll have to go to war with the surrounding villages to protect her?
Yes, I am.
Well, then that's the way of things. This little one needs a home. You know, you can't have too many children around. It would be worth a war to give her a family.
Yes, it might be.
Wolf Dreamer stood on top of a red ridge overlooking a canyon filled with crumbling stone villages. Around him, a dry, rough-hewn landscape spread. Deeply eroded plains stretched as far as he could see, dotted with sandstone buttes that poked their square heads against the azure sky. Dusty drainages sliced meandering canyons through the vastness, marked by the serpentine lines of scrubby trees and brush. The tang of sage drifted on the hot wind. Dressed in a wealth of colored feathers and copper bells, Wolf Dreamer had walked with men here. The people had sprinkled his path with blue cornmeal and sung his praises while shaking their deer bone rattles. In return, he had showered them with the richest of life's gifts, rain. Now only field mice, snakes, scorpions, and coyotes roamed the crumbling ruins in this empty canyon. Wolf Dreamer braced a hand against the boulder beside him and studied Sunchaser. The dreamer knelt in the middle of the disintegrating plaza below. His white hair stirred in the wind that swept the faces of the sheer canyon walls. Sunchaser's eyes focused on the huge five-storied building that curved around him like the cold arm of a dead lover. His face had gone slack with wonder, as though he could see beyond the desolation to the great civilization that had once thrived here.
Do you see the ghosts, Sunchaser? Can you hear their voices?
Wolf Dreamer could. He saw the men leaning against the clay-washed faces of the buildings, napping out arrow points, and the women sitting in the plaza, talking as they rolled out clay and coiled it into beautiful pots. He could hear the gobbling of the tamed turkeys that strutted the grounds, and the laughter of the children who had once raced so freely through the cool shadows of this monumental village. Nevertheless, he had chosen this time, when they had been dead for over two centuries, to teach his lesson. Wolf Dreamer had arrived before Dawnchild awoke, but he'd left Sunchaser alone. The dreamer had wandered the ruins like a little boy, running, calling out, exploring the thousands of rooms within walking distance. And finally, he had returned here, to fall on his knees and stare in awe at the crumbling magnificence. He'd sung for a while, beautiful lilting songs, calling forth the shreds of power that lurked in the fallen stones, gathering them around him like a transparent fortress wall. Then the dreamer had gone quiet. Wolfdreamer walked the trail that led over the crest of the ridge and wound down into the canyon. He'd braided his long black hair into a single plait that hung down to the middle of his back. The path between the silted-in villages had been lined with crushed potsherds. The fine black-and-white designs on them blazed beneath his feet. Murmurs of ghosts haunted these ruins. Their words rose and fell with the intensity of wind, drifting homelessly around the looming masonry walls, as if searching for surviving relatives, sisters, or cousins who could save them. But they'd already obliterated every possible refuge. The ghosts would never leave this place. Sunchaser just gazed at the ruins. The magnificent paintings depicting the gods that had once covered the white plastered walls had flaked and crumbled into chunky piles. Only the 30-hand-tall figures of the Yamuhakto, the great warriors of the East and West, continued to grace the front of the building. They carried lightning bolts in their hands, aimed down at the plaza. But the rich reds, blues, and yellows that had detailed their terrifying masks had paled to insignificance. When Wolfdreamer stood beside Sunchaser, he saw that the dreamer clutched a stone knife in both hands, one of the rare turquoise knives used by the great priests in their ceremonials. Sunchaser had gripped the stone so tightly for so long that he'd snapped it in two. Wolfdreamer sat down and leaned back on his elbows. Sunchaser's hair and craggy face bore a thin coating of red dust. The dirt had mixed with tears and puddled in the lines at the corners of Sunchaser's black eyes. He looked very tired and hurt. Wolfdreamer tipped up his face. As Father's son sailed westward on his afternoon journey, shadows stalked across the plaza, cool on Wolfdreamer's bronze skin.
This is a majestic place.
It was. I remember 100 glorious summer solstice celebrations. When Father's son peaked above the eastern horizon, shafts of light pierced the sacred ceremonial chambers here, and the clan elders burst out in songs that shook the foundation of the world. They sang the gods into existence. They danced the world back into harmony.
Wolfdreamer gestured to the great warriors.
In the last days, the people painted everything they could, trying to prevent power from abandoning the canyon.
But the power, it's almost dead. I've been trying all day.
Yes. Over the centuries, a few traces have returned, but not many.
You mean there was a time when all the power had disappeared?
With every tree they cut, every field they tilled, every war cry they uttered, they bled away the strength of their civilization until the last trace of power fled in the searing summer wind.
But how could that happen? Why would power abandon them?
Because by then, it was too late.
The dreamers weren't strong enough to bring the power back?
Their greatest dreamer, named Born of Water, had failed long before, and not all of the dreamers alive could save them then, though they tried. The old ones who built this sprawling civilization called all of their dreamers together, the great as well as the small, and isolated them in that subterranean ceremonial chamber over there on the north side of the plaza. They sang and fasted for almost a moon, sucking every bit of power from the rocky cliffs, the animals, the clouds that drifted by.
And still they failed?
There was so little power left, Sunchaser, that the amount they could collect did them little good. This place, while one of the most spectacular, is not the only one. There are others, scattered across time and land. I could have taken you to Cahokia, or Etowah, the Medicine Wheel, Tippecanoe, or Wounded Knee. All of them are places where people sang, and danced, and prayed, and died.
Why did you bring me here, Wolfdreamer? What am I supposed to learn from these palace builders?
I wanted you to see the great heights your people will reach 10,000 cycles from now. And to tell you that over the vast span of time, tens of dreamers will fail, yet your people will still build this magnificent civilization.
At what? What cost?
Many things will change. Beautiful animals will die, along with different kinds of trees and butterflies. Some of the sweetest flowers in the world will pass out of existence.
I have not failed yet, Wolf Dreamer. Mammoths still exist in my world.
Yes, for now. I haven't given up on you, Sun Chaser. I just wanted you to know that I realize how hard it is. I too loved once. She was beautiful and kind. I made a different choice than you have. But that doesn't mean you'll fail because of your love. A few rare dreamers actually need love to keep them dreaming well. But sometimes even the best, the most faithful dreamers fail. Some fail because they choose worldly responsibilities. Others because they're just not strong enough. And some fail because they're being witched and don't even know it. But failure is not the end. Power will just select someone else and pray that its new dreamer can accomplish the impossible task set before him or her. And there's something more you should know, Sunchaser.
What is that?
Just this, dreamer. Failure is not wasted effort. Mammoths may vanish from the world, but that doesn't mean your efforts are smoke in the wind, Sunchaser. Every moment that humans spend cherishing and worrying about the life around them is another spark added to the ocean of light. It drives back the darkness for just that much longer.
Wolf Dreamer, please help me. I feel lost. I don't know what's right anymore. I can't get through the maze. People are losing faith in me. What am I doing so badly?
Wolf Dreamer smiled and put his hand over Sunchaser's fist that held the halves of the turquoise knife.
I came to help you. You don't realize it, but all the suffering, all the confusion and exhaustion you've gone through were necessary. A beginning. Even the witching had a place. The wrong paths you think you've taken weren't wrong at all. You've just been concentrating so hard on the twists and turns that you missed the reason why you were traveling.
But isn't that why you gave me the maze? So I could study it? Because it represented the sacred geography of the land of the dead? I thought that if I understood the twists and turns, I'd be able to find my way to you at any time I needed to.
No, that wasn't the reason. I gave you the maze in the hopes that you would stare so hard at the lines that you'd finally see the spaces between them.
I don't understand.
Answer this for me. What would the maze be without its background? Without the hide or the stone or the bark you draw it upon?
What would it be? I don't know. It wouldn't be anything, would it?
Wolf Dreamer lowered a finger to the dusty plaza. He patiently drew each of the maze lines, but overlapping, until they obliterated the spaces between the lines.
What is this, Sunchaser?
Sunchaser leaned forward. He glanced sideways at Wolf Dreamer, then back at the lines.
It looks like all the strands of the maze have pulled tight into a knot.
Does it?
Well, yes. I mean, that's what it looks like to me. What do you think it looks like?
I think it looks like an eagle. Monster rock eagle, actually.
Sunchaser's face slackened as a glimmer of understanding lit his eyes.
Monster rock eagle who sits at the crossing that leads to the heart of the maze?
The very same. Few dreamers ever see him, and he's very hard to kill, but you must kill him, or you'll never find your way through the maze.
Wolf Dreamer waited while Sunchaser digested that bit of information and related it to Good Plume's dream. Sunchaser's face went from intrigue to fear in less than 10 heartbeats. He looked up at Wolf Dreamer with his whole soul in his eyes.
You mean that the heart of the maze is a tangle? A knot? I know it has always been the twists and turns that have frightened me, but I thought the land of the dead was the heart of the maze.
Monster Rock Eagle keeps watch over something far more precious. He guards the center.
The center of what?
Life. And death. To unravel the knot and find the center, you must live Monster Rock Eagle's death at the same time that he is dying your life. Don't you see? When you've both died, there will no longer be any dreamer to seek him, nor will there be any eagle to block the path. The point where the two of you meet in death is the center.
But what's there? At the center, I mean.
Emptiness. Just emptiness. I can make the explanation no simpler than that, Sunchaser.
Wolfdreamer got to his feet and stretched his back muscles. Sunchaser stood beside Wolfdreamer and folded his arms over his chest as though to keep all the confusion locked inside.
You make things too hard, Dreamer. Whatever convinced you that the lines of the maze were the path? The lines are only markers on the way. They'll just lead you in circles. You have to walk the empty spaces between the lines to get anywhere.
How can I walk the spaces between the strands of a knot, Wolfdreamer?
Wolfdreamer laughed harder than he had laughed in cycles. It felt good to laugh, and to be here in the warm sunshine, bathed in the sacred fragrances of the desert. Oh, how he cherished them.
Everything is connected to everything else, Sunchaser, remember.
That sounds like a nod if I ever heard one.
Wolfdreamer turned and gazed at Sunchaser, praying, hoping that the dreamer had at last understood, hoping he now saw that the strands of the star web that connected all living things and the slithering, disconnected lines of the maze were the same. But the dreamer only met his gaze with a pained frown.
It's time for you to go home, Sunchaser. Go home and think about it. Don't forget what we've discussed here. First, you must challenge the witch who's trying to kill you, and then you'll be free to continue dreaming, working for Mammoth above. But go home now, Sunchaser.